East friends. My name's Tom. I'm the pastor here at Sycamore Creek Church, and I have a pretty wicked ping pong serve when it actually hits the table. Let's see. Let's try one more. There we go. Oh, you're calling for it, Thomas? Here we go. Whoa. Right around your head there, Bob, in between. I'm glad that wasn't a serve fail this morning by hitting the pastor's husband emeritus in the head right off the bat. Hey, I'm glad you're here today as we begin this new series called Serve Fail. We're trying to not have a serve fail over the next couple of weeks and looking at serving, putting a little love in our heart, as Jeremy just sang. I want to start this morning with the Nobel Prize. You all know what the Nobel Prize is, right? You can get a Nobel Peace Prize or Nobel Literature Prize. Do you know where the Nobel Prize came from? Who started it? Alfred Nobel. Now, in his day, Alfred Nobel was not known for the Nobel Peace Prize. Alfred Nobel was known for being the inventor of dynamite. How did he get from being the inventor of dynamite to being the founder of the Nobel Prizes, Peace Prize and Literature Prize? Well, here's a little clip from the Smithsonian channel that tells you how.
Swedish inventor Alfred Nobel has successfully created the world's first safe explosive, dynamite. Through patents and licensing, he amasses a $265 million fortune. But in 1888, his life and everything he's achieved is turned upside down.
Alfred Nobel's life was tainted when he read an obituary.
It should be for Alfred's brother, Ludwig, who has just died. But the newspaper makes an error. Alfred Nobel is reading his own obituary.
The obituary said that Alfred Nobel had been a merchant of death who had manufactured explosives and just made the world a worse place.
A number of terrorist incidents using dynamite have created a dark legacy.
During his lifetime, Alfred Nobel was reviled for inventing dynamite because it was this destructive, explosive form of weaponry.
The obituary rocks Nobel, but it also gives him a last chance of redemption. In 1895, he changes his will, donating almost his entire fortune to create a foundation that will forever link his name to life instead of death.
He started a fund that should give out prizes to people that had, as he said, conferred the greatest benefit to mankind.
Called the Nobel Prize, it will honor those that further human understanding and peace, from statesmen to scientists.
Those were the true heirs of Nobels, and those are the people that still today win the Nobel Prize.
The Nobel Peace Prize is given to those who during their preceding year shall have conferred the what? The greatest benefit on mankind. If you woke up tomorrow morning and your obituary was a headline in the newspaper, what would it say? Would it say you were the greatest? And what would it mean to be the greatest? I think we all want to have a dynamic impact. Oh, that was good, wasn't it, David? We all want to be have lives of significance. We all want to be great. But to be great, we need a guiding principle of greatness. What kind of greatness are you aiming for? What kind of significance do you want your life to mean? Now, Jesus' disciples were having an argument about greatness as they were walking along, and Jesus encounters this. Here's how the story goes. It says, after they arrived at Capernaum and settled in a house, Jesus asked his disciples, "What were you discussing on the road?" And they didn't want to answer because they had been arguing about which of them was the greatest. It's like, Muhammad Ali, I'm the greatest, you know? And they're pretty embarrassed by the fact that they were arguing about this. And what's interesting about Jesus' response here that we're going to read in just a minute is he doesn't actually chastise them for arguing about the greatest. He redirects it. He points their greatness in another direction. Here's what he says. He sat down and he called his 12 disciples over to him and he said, whoever wants to be first or whoever wants to be the greatest must take last place and be the servant of everyone else. If you want to be first, if you want to be the greatest, you're going to be the servant. In fact, elsewhere in Matthew, Jesus says that the greatest among you must be a servant. Jesus doesn't say don't be great. He says make your greatness in serving. Now, the wisdom book of the Bible, the Proverbs, says it this way. The one who blesses others is blessed, is abundantly blessed. The one who helps others are helped. The one who, if you bless, you help others, you serve others, then you are blessed. And it comes back to you. You're helped as well. Now, there's a little book that we are using for this series that's helpful, been helpful to us. It's called The Greatness Principle. And it's a book by Nelson Searcy. It's I have copies of it back in the micro bookstore. It's just $4. You could sit down literally and read this afternoon. But it's a very helpful book. And Searcy puts forward a greatness principle. And here's what he says. When you bless others, when you serve others, when you help others, God blesses you. When you bless others, that's the greatness principle. You want to be great? Make your life about blessing and serving others. Blessing and serving others. Now, throughout this series, we're going to look at how we together as a church bless and serve others. Next week, we're going to look at serving in the world. We're going to hope that we don't make a serve fail when it comes to serving the world or lack of serving the world. The week after that, we're going to have a vision day for how we use this building and how we're going to run a capital campaign. We're sort of gearing that up right now and how we serve through our buildings. We're going to wrap the series up in 3 weeks with a commitment Sunday for that capital campaign, but also looking at how do we serve in the church. We don't make a serve fail when it comes to the church. But today I want to start with how do we serve in the community? Because we as followers of Jesus are called to serve the church, the community, and the world. The church, the community, and the world. So this series is a celebration of how we serve. There's going to be some high-fiving because there's a lot of things that we're already doing. It's going to be an exploration of why we serve, why we do it. It's a reminder of how our buildings help us serve. It's also a challenge to not become complacent, but to ever grow in our service. And it's a chance to not make a serve fail, to not make a serve fail. Now, where I want to dive in with serving the community is in a parable that Jesus tells, and it's a very familiar parable, but we often just reference it without going really deep into it. It's a parable that Jesus is telling to explain how we will be judged on the day of judgment. I always get a lot of questions about the day of judgment. You know, what's going to happen on the day of judgment, Pastor? Well, Jesus gives us a really clear, so this is how it's going to be judged. It's going to be like a king who people come to him, and he separates them on the right and on the left. And they go one way or the other based on what they did in life. And here's how Jesus tells the story. He says, then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. That's what I want to do. I want to inherit this kingdom, this eternal kingdom. He says, for I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. Now these people on the right are like, well, when did that ever happen? I mean, you're the king. Like, we never saw like anybody with their crown or with their royal robes on and with the procession, you know, riding down the street with your white horse or whatever. And the king says this. He says, well, the righteous ones will reply, Lord, when did we ever see this? And hungry and sick and strangers and in prison. And the king will say, I tell you the truth. When you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it to me. Doing it to me. Now, there's six things here that Jesus highlights, all right? He says, you feed the hungry. You give water to the thirsty. You welcome the stranger, you clothe the naked, you heal the sick, and you visit those who are in prison. I want to walk through each one of those today and look at how do you as being part of this church have the opportunity to do that, or how are we already doing it together? And one of the things I noticed when I started to put this message together was that recently we've adopted another church, Potterville United Methodist Church, and in doing so, it was like our service to the community exploded. It like doubled. And we have a special guest here with us this morning, because this first one, when we're talking about hungry, We have Joanne Taylor with us this morning. Joanne, why don't you come on up? Joanne runs the food ministry at Potterville, and there's all kinds of amazing things that the food ministry does out at Potterville. And thank you for being here with us. We always want to challenge people here on Sunday morning.
Good morning.
So, Joanne, you have a long history of food, food ministry, food work in your life. Tell us, where does that start at?
Well, it starts back when I was a young child, growing up in a family where we were never hungry. But I went to country school, which, for those that don't know what that is, it's a one-room school, one teacher and multiple kids. And there was always some kids that came from the less fortunate. My parents, my mother particularly, instilled, put an extra sandwich in your lunch pail and an extra cookie, an extra apple to share. So we were always taking extra food to school and sharing with those that didn't have a lunch.
This was before the free and reduced lunch programs at schools.
Yes, there was no... If you got free food, it was because your buddy gave you her sandwich. And that started. And in the neighborhood, the other neighbors would gather food up and take to these less fortunate. So that's where it all started for me. In the family, both my mom and dad brought us up to believe that, you know, take half of what you have in your pail and give to the others. And
Now this went into your profession then. You eventually ended up working in food service.
I 40 some years in food service, 40 years. I retired from Eaton County, just the county alone, with 38 years of food service, starting with the local hospital, going into the extended care, which is the nursing home, and then on into the schools, and eventually I got a call to come to jail. But I was able to go home every night, so that was a plus. My children used to say, when their grandchildren especially, they'd say, "What's your grandma do?" Oh, she's in jail. So everybody kind of, you know, raised their eyebrow. But
so you prepared the food for people in jail.
Yes, when I first started in corrections, I was preparing the food. Then I got smart and went back to school, so then I could be the leader.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Now you told me some stories about people who were in jail because of hunger.
Yes, there was quite a few fathers and mothers that would be put incarcerated in jail for stealing food to feed their families. And also the 17 and 18-year-olds that were incarcerated because for some reason they either chose to leave home or fell through the cracks. And to survive, they would steal, they'd go in the grocery store and stuff their pockets full of food. So unfortunately, they were incarcerated. It's unfortunate in one way, but then they used to say it, they had this saying in prison, they still do, three cots and a hot, which meant, you know, there's a place to sleep and three hot meals a day. Mm. And
I can't imagine being in a place where I was either faced with the choice of my kids going hungry or stealing food.
Yes.
And that's part of, I think, what motivated you to get involved with creating this food pantry or helping develop the food pantry at Potterville.
Yes, it was. When I retired 6 years ago, the church had a small pantry. People would call and they'd give them a little bit of food. But one night laying in bed awake, I thought, you know what? We can do better. We can expand this. If we're going to do it, let's do it right. So then we increased it, and we've gone from having 9 people to 55 families in a recent food bank. We have it once a month, so we're serving quite a few of the needy, but there's more out in the community that need help.
What are some of the numbers of people that you see come through here?
Okay, for our food bank, we break them up into 3 different groups: 0 to 18, 18 to 59, and 60 plus. And in 2016, the total, 0 to 18, was 574 people.
That's basically 574 children. And teenagers.
Yes, teenagers. 18 to 59 was 838, and 60 plus is 275.
Wow.
And that equivalents to 30,498 meals. We give food for 3 meals a day for 7 days. And that equivalents to the amount of pounds. This is one year, 42,175 pounds of food.
That's 21 tons of food. We were looking that up. That's like 2.5 elephants worth of food.
Or so many rhinoceroses.
It was like 4 rhinoceroses. Yeah. How much does it cost to feed someone? What's the cost of that?
The paid cost for 2016 was $11,809. That's the paid food. That doesn't include all of the food that's donated and the free food that we do receive through the Greater Lansing Food Bank. And it averages out $6 a person a month. And we give them 25 pounds each.
So $6 a person basically gives them 3 meals for 7 days.
For 7 days.
7 days,
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, tell me a little bit about some of the people that you see come through the food pantry, some of those stories.
Well, some of the stories we hear is moms will come in and say, oh, I'm so glad we're getting food today. I can eat. I haven't eaten in 3 days because I didn't want to take the food away from my children. Or one gentleman had said, oh, I hope you have something besides Honey Oats cereal because that's all we've lived on for 3 days.
Now, what really strikes me about that is I think sometimes we have the perception that there's only hunger or poverty in the city. Oh, but this is in the rural areas that you're encountering.
It's all over. It's all over. Children are going to school hungry. They're going to bed hungry. And our seniors, that's where my heart really is. You know, coming up before I got into corrections, I was in the nursing homes. And you see them, they're malnutritioned, and they're living on just, I don't know how some of them can even survive. But those are the ones that they just don't want to take it away from the family with the kids, so they won't share, or they won't come to get food. When I started, we had 6 seniors that were 60 plus, and now we're up to 29. So
wow.
That does my heart good. And we see more of them coming to our community dinners. And also we have a bread drop where this last 2 weeks, we order it from the Greater Lansing. We get 2,542 pounds of baked goods.
That's literally a ton.
Yes, that is. And Tom and Mark and Little Tom, we call Tom Fox Little Tom. they have been there to help carry things in. And I have a group that takes it off the truck and a group that takes it out of the boxes, and we put it on tables. We do boxes up for low or no income apartment buildings and a senior center in Charlotte for the abuse, domestic abuse. And then we open up to the public, and each family comes through, and we give them 4 grocery bags, the plastic bags, to fill up.
And baked goods.
Yeah. It's bread, cookies, all kinds of things.
So somebody could be involved by helping unload all of that ton of food.
Tell us
some other ways folks could be involved.
Right here in Lansing, there's the Greater Lansing Food Bank, which they provide for like 4 or 5 counties. There's times when a group can go in there and sort food that's donated to them, you know, put the vegetables with the vegetables. That's one way. Or spare up a food drive with non-perishables. That can be with your church, your neighborhood, your Boy Scout or Girl Scout kids, something like that. And then there's always, you know, the money is always welcome.
$6 goes a long way.
$6 goes a long way. Yes.
Hey, friends, this is a serve win, isn't it? High five, Joanne. Join me in thanking God for Joanne this morning. Isn't it fun that we basically just now have a food pantry at Potterville? Thank you, God. That's a serve win. So sometimes it's not just feeding people physically with their hunger, but it's also feeding their spirits, their hunger with their spirits or with friendships. Once again, going back out to Potterville, this last Sunday we did a big cake auction, and we had the fellowship hall all full of people who were bidding on cakes. It was a hoot. I'd never experienced it before. Here's some of the cakes. Look how fancy some of those cakes were. Others were just really simple, and they went anywhere from $5 up to, I think the highest I saw was $130. There's Mike Walker, the auctioneer. He's trying to get everybody to bid up because, of course, it's more than just buying the cake. Here's the cake that we won. That was the one that Micah wanted. It cost me $100. It's the most expensive cake I've ever bought. But you know what? It really wasn't paying for the dessert. We were paying to buy scholarships for kids to go to camp, and that's what this whole thing is about. The big cake auction is to provide scholarships for kids to camp. Now, this year we raised a little under $5,000 to send 21 campers to camp. And you're going to fall out of your seats when I tell you what the amount is for the whole life of this, because they've been doing it, or I should say we've been doing it for 7 years. And over the life of that, it's been a little over $82,000 that we've raised auctioning off cakes every year to send 202 campers to camp. I asked Lori, the director of this, the person who organizes it, I said, "What? Tell me the stories about these kids." She said there was one young boy who's lost his mother 1 year, and he went to camp for the first time, and he went to camp the next 3 years. And when he got back, he was talking to Lori, and he said, "I didn't know how much I had missed until I went to camp." That's a hunger that he had. He didn't even know it till he tasted and saw that the Lord is good. And of course, those kids who go to camp are introduced to Jesus and supported in that, and come back to their churches ready to follow Jesus. Out on our information table, there's some summer camp guides. And if you know a kid who would like to go to camp, who maybe can't afford it, pick one of those up and take it with you, and you'll see the information to sign up for a scholarship. Now, Jesus said that when we feed the hungry, we feed him. That's a serve win. Let's not have a serve fail. Let's not ignore the hungry, either literal or metaphorical. Let's talk about thirsty, giving water to the thirsty. When I think about that, my mind immediately goes to the Flint water crisis, right? Which we're still struggling with, still struggling to provide basic clean water that doesn't have lead in it. Now, we don't wear our denomination on our sleeve here at Sycamore Creek, but we're a United Methodist church, and so I'm always a little surprised whenever I see the word United Methodist pop up in the news, because that's our church. That's what we're connected with. And I was watching this news report about the Flint water crisis, and listen for our church in this news report.
Well, cars lining up for hours today at two brand new help centers in Flint. The one-stop shops officially open today to help with the city's water crisis. ABC 12's Natalie Zeroni was there to see it all kick off and find out how it's different from water resource sites around the city.
Well, we're told in the past month during this soft launch of the help centers, Bethel United Methodist Church and Greater Holy Temple have served more than 800 people a day.
We're transitioning from the crisis stage into the long-term stage of recovery for our city.
Food Bank of Eastern Michigan President Bill Kerr says that idea of recovery for the city is why the new help centers provide more than just bottled water.
Folks can come in on a daily basis and receive water, nutritious food products, as well as health and physical health and mental health services.
At Bethel United Methodist Church today, an official launch of the two help centers, there are a lot of organizations involved in making the centers happen. The two biggest are the Food Bank and the PepsiCo Foundation with $570,000 grant.
The thing about Flint that sticks with me is the resilience of the human spirit and the ability for people who are facing great adversity to, notwithstanding that, figure out what unites them, what brings them together.
Residents picking up supplies say it's great to see a place that offers water and more. Food deserts have been a problem in many areas of Flint for a while.
Yeah, I think it's a much needed thing for the neighborhood because we do really need help.
I think it's a beautiful thing.
But people say the fact they're still lugging cases of bottled water home 11 months since the water crisis was officially declared is more than frustrating.
I'm really sick of it, Todd. I got three grandsons and they can't hardly take a bath, and you know, I have to boil water just to wash dishes.
These two help centers are going to be open for the next year. After that, the organizations in charge will reevaluate and see if they need to continue. In Flint, Natalie Zeroni, ABC 12 News.
Did you catch it? Bethel United Methodist Church. Now, you can give to the Flint Water Crisis by going to michiganumc.org. But last year, our church, we didn't put a huge emphasis on it, but we invited people to give, and we had about $1,300, a little over $1,300 that came in for the Flint Water Crisis. Now, when you add that up with all of the United Methodist churches across the whole denomination, it turns out that over $400,000 was given by United Methodist churches to just give basic water, basic, clean, drinkable water. Water to the residents of Flint. Now, it's not done yet, is it? There's still a lot that needs to happen there, and we want to continue to focus on that and continue to encourage those who have the ability to make those changes. But that's what we do. We have a serve win. We don't make a serve fail and miss giving water to the thirsty just right here in our own state. Now, we've talked about hunger. We've talked about thirst. Let's talk about welcoming the stranger. And actually, we just did a whole series called The Year of Small Things. We looked at hospitality, welcoming people into our homes by a foreign exchange student, adoption, a foster parent, a foster child, or even somebody who's in transition. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time right now on the kind of literal welcoming of people, but we welcome people into this building, strangers, we welcome guests here. And I got a question for you. Who's on hospitality this morning? Everybody, if you're not, the only person who's not on hospitality this morning is a first-time guest, okay? So let me ask that question again. Who's on hospitality this morning? Everybody, okay? Joanne, next time you come, you're on hospitality. You get one Sunday off, okay? But at Potterville, you're on hospitality. Now, whenever I do a meet and eat and I sit down with people who are new and I ask them, what do you notice about our church? They almost always say, you guys are so welcoming. You're so friendly. This is such a non-judgmental place here. I just felt I felt like I fit right in. And I said, you know what that is? That's because of the 5-10 link rule. 5-10 link. And I teach them this. When you came in on your seats, there was this little card, and it has on one side the 5-10 link. Here's what it means. Most people, when they come to church, they're here to visit with their friends. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's great to get together with your friends at church on Sunday morning at worship. But we're going to ask you to give us the 5 minutes before the service and the 5 minutes after the service to focus on getting to know somebody that you don't know, that you don't know. And you don't have to cover the whole building. Just cover the 10 feet around you. Who's in front of you? Who's behind you? Who's in front of you? Who's behind you? Who's on this side and who's on this side? Greet those people. You know, I'm the pastor, I'm the paid greeter, so a guest sort of filters it that way, but when they sit down to somebody, next to somebody who greets them, that feels more authentic. And then link up with them, connect with them, give them your name. And if you know somebody next to you, you can say, hey, my name's Tom, what's your name? Barb, have you met this guy, Bob? You have, okay. Don't meet this guy, Jeremy, he's not worth meeting, all right? Link them up with somebody. That's the 5-10 link rule. It's as simple as that. It welcomes the stranger. So we looked at hunger, thirst, stranger. What about the naked? Well, I don't know that I've ever seen anybody running naked down the street. But we often, you have. Well, that's impressive, Marion. I'm not sure I want to know how you saw somebody naked running down the street. But usually we think about it really literally in something like this. Maybe. So we make a SERV fail when we ignore basic needs like clothing or housing, but sometimes it's also something like backpacks and supplies when kids go to school. In fact, I'm going to go back out to Potterville because every year out in Potterville, we work with local businesses and we buy backpacks and we put supplies so the kids don't go to school naked without those basic needs. And this last year, we gave out 80 backpacks to kids so that they wouldn't be naked going to school. Now, another way that people can sometimes be naked is naked in community. They don't have a community wrapped around them, supporting them. And you know what? We do a really great job here at Sycamore Creek of inviting people in to join us. And I actually saw a little bit of that this past week because our church got an award. If you follow me on Facebook, you saw that I was at the My Addies this past week, and it was kind of like an Oscar event. It was the Mid-Michigan Advertising Association Awards, the My Addies, and our marketing firm that had done our Easter campaign last year submitted the Easter campaign. This isn't something like we were actually the only church in this award ceremony. It's not a churchy thing or a religious thing. It's just a marketing and advertising. So I actually put, you remember these, if you were around last Easter, there's like one for each of the five or six venues that we did for Easter last year. And we won a gold award for the ways that we advertise to come in and join our community. And so that actually goes on to the regional contest here. We're competing against Chicago and Indianapolis and all those sorts of things. It was fun to be there and to see our church's efforts at inviting people into community so that they have community wrapped around them awarded in that way. Give yourself a high five, Sycamore Creek, all right? Good job. So we've talked about the hungry, we've talked about the thirsty, we've talked about welcoming the stranger, talked about the negative. Well, what about the sick? Now, next week we're going to go really deep into that because we're going to talk about how we serve the world, and we send medical missions teams down to Nicaragua twice a year, and so you're going to hear more about that next week. But we also try to heal the sick when they're sick emotionally or psychologically. We have a counselor that meets out of our building here every Monday. And if you don't have the funds or insurance to see a counselor, we have funds available for you. And we're actually working on a counselor that's going to be meeting out of our Potterville campus starting this summer. And so we're healing the sick, whether that's physical sickness or emotional or psychological. Now, this last one is kind of interesting. Jesus says, you did it to me when you visited those in prison. Did you notice that he doesn't say that you visited the innocent in prison? He didn't qualify whether they were innocent or guilty. He didn't qualify whether they had stolen food because they were trying to feed their hungry kids or whether they had murdered somebody. Like, he just says, if you visited somebody in prison, you visited me. Now, this is probably the least developed of all of these six for our church, but I see it popping up here and there. It's something that's close to my heart. Most of my siblings have been in and out of prison or jail or juvenile detention. My parents adopted several of my siblings, and they've had a rough time at times. They're all doing quite well right now, or almost all of them are. So my wife actually met my brother for the first time when we went and visited him in prison. I currently right now have a friend who has a family member who's in prison, and so I'm writing that friend from time to time. I was talking with Pastor Mark, and he said there's a small group in our church that there's someone in that small group whose family member is in prison because of murder. And so that small group has started to write that family member in prison. So these are all ways that that we visit those in prison. But sometimes prison is more metaphorical, isn't it? We're in prisons because of choices that we've made or choices that other people have made that have put us in prison. Prison, sometimes it's harder to get out of. The prison of debt or divorce or despair or depression. And in each of those, when we help people out of those prisons, we're doing it for Jesus. We're doing it for Jesus. So let's go back to where we started with this whole greatness principle, all right? You remember that? When you bless others, when you serve others, God blesses you. When you serve others, when you bless others, God blesses you. That's why we ask every small group to go out in the community each semester and do one service project. We go over to North Elementary and we do the gardens because we want to be great. But we go over to Lyons and we remodel a house and we sell it to a family because we want to be great. We invite that family over the next Sunday and we pray for them because we want to be great. We go down to Mount Hope Steam School. In the last 2 years, we painted because we want to be great. We collect items for Compassion Closet because we want to be great. We every Thursday before Easter, on Monday, Thursday, we go and we take over two laundromats and we hand out free quarters and detergent because we want to be great. This past Wednesday, we did for the first time ever hand out $5 free gas at Frank's BP in Potterville, and we did it for like the third or fourth year right here at the Marathon Station right next door because we want to be great. Be great. Now, as we were wrapping up last Wednesday or this past Wednesday here, there was a guy that came up to us and he told us what it meant to him. Hey, listen and see.
You know what I'm saying? Thank you so much. Thank you for what all you do. No, you guys have more of a blessed day. I'm serious. This is great. This is terrific.
Thanks.
Is that me saying this terrific? This terrific. Hey, let me tell you something else.
What?
My girlfriend.
Oh yeah, she was in the car next door. Yeah.
No. That's not my girlfriend. This is kind of cool because my girlfriend sold a house to some ladies, and then they invited her over here to this church just recently.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So now I will be back with her then with another big Kool-Aid smile.
Do you know who that guy was? I do. He was Jesus. He was Jesus. Don't make a serve fail and miss Jesus. Don't make a serve fail and miss Jesus. God, help us to feed the hungry. God, help us to give water to the thirsty. God, help us to clothe the naked and greet the stranger. Help us to heal the sick. And God, help us to visit those who are in prison. In the name of Jesus, in the power of the Spirit, and all who agreed said, Amen. Amen. Amen.